I am really excited to tell you about a brand new podcast I'm hosting called Sports Criminals. It explores the extraordinary true crimes committed by professionals in the world of sports. Here's a special clip of the first episode on Oscar Pistorius, an Olympic runner who fatally shot his girlfriend. To listen to the full first episode, follow Sports Criminals for free on Spotify and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. I hope you enjoy the clip.
London, 2012. The 30th Summer Olympic Games. The 66,000 capacity stadium was full to the brim for the men's 400-meter semifinal. Eight of the 32 fastest men in the world stood in front of the starting blocks.
There was a smattering of applause for the Venezuelan in lane two. The Brit in lane three received a predictably warm roar of appreciation from his home country. The Belgian in lane four fed off the energy of the excited crowd as they hollered for him as well. But it was the South African in lane five who ignited the stadium into a frenzied uproar. Indeed, millions of eyes around the world were fixated on the man in the fifth lane.
The starting gun fired and the runners took off. The South African maintained pace coming out of the first turn, but was soon overtaken by the Belgian.
Well, this was of little consequence. All the South African needed to do to qualify for the finals was finish in the top three.
But then the runners came to the home stretch, and the South African found himself in sixth place, looking ahead at the determined runners, including the man who would go on to win gold. In the last 50 meters, the South African fell back into seventh. In the final 20 meters, he was overtaken by the Venezuelan, and crossed the finish line in dead last, several strides behind the man in front of him.
But then, the winner of the heat, the future gold medalist, turned to embrace the South African. He signaled that he wanted to trade the bibs that had their names printed on them, a sign of the greatest respect between athletes.
The South African man then raised his hand and bowed to the crowd as though he had won. The stadium cheered wildly for him. At homes around the world, families sat in their living rooms and shook their heads in disbelief. Amazing, some said. Absolutely incredible.
They reacted as such because the South African was a man named Oscar Pistorius, the first double amputee to run in the Olympic Games. To get here, he not only had to qualify competing against the world's greatest, but also navigate the trials of hellacious litigation to prove that his carbon fiber prosthetics did not give him an unfair advantage.
Pistorius had become an international hero, a poster boy for overcoming obstacles. But what he would be remembered for was not his phenomenal, unrivaled resume of athletic achievement. It was the result of a single night 6 months after the London Olympics, when Oscar Pistorius fired four shots into his closed bathroom door, killing his 29-year-old girlfriend, Riva Steenkamp. Welcome to Sports Criminals, a Parcast original. Every week, we dive into the dark side of sports history and look at athletes who not only broke the law, but broke the rules and covenants of their sport. We'll also uncover how their actions impacted the history of the sport they played and had a ripple of cultural and social implications. I'm Tim Johnson.
And I'm Carter Roy. Sports is built on a foundation of fairness, with rules that aim to set up equal obstacles for two opposing sides. So why is it that so many people within this strict moral code stray outside the law? Whether that means they simply break the rules of the game or commit a brutal act like murder, there are an untold number of athletes and others involved with the sports world that wind up in a life of debauchery.
Sports Criminals aims to unpack this connection. we seek to uproot how the fame and cutthroat nature of professional and amateur sports can exacerbate and feed some of our darkest desires.
You can find episodes of Sports Criminals and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Sports Criminals for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Sports Criminals in the search bar.
The story of Oscar Pistorius is one of the most emotionally complex in sports history. In many ways, he represented everything that draws us to athletics: overcoming obstacles, the triumph of spirit and determination, an unparalleled work ethic, and a commitment to persevere no matter the odds. Pistorius was not just an inspiration to Paralympic athletes, but to all athletes, proving that even the greatest trials can be overcome.
The runner also carried with him a confident and light charisma, charming his way through interviews to become a media darling. Not just a hero of South Africa, but a hero of the world. The attention he brought to Paralympic athletics flooded the community with sponsorships and spectators they had never had before. His humble but confident outward persona and what appeared to be a genuine and authentic joie de vivre made it absolutely shocking when the events of Valentine's Day 2013 came to pass. In just a few short hours, everything the world thought they knew about Oscar Pistorius started unraveling.
At 3 a.m. that morning, Pistorius shot and killed his girlfriend, Riva Steenkamp, through his closed bathroom door at his home in Pretoria, South Africa. Pistorius claimed it was an accident. Prosecutors called it premeditated murder and cited an unknown, unpredictable, incredibly aggressive side to Pistorius that he had hidden from the media for years.
In the story you're about to hear, we will try and present the tragic rise and fall of Oscar Pistorius from the most objective viewpoint possible. But what will come to light is the simple truth that it's impossible to know what happened on that fateful night. Whether Pistorius knowingly shot his girlfriend of 3 months, or did so believing he was protecting her, his actions that night were incredibly reckless. Perhaps he was a cold killer and incredibly calculated liar. Or maybe he was so intensely traumatized by the idea of a break-in that he was willing to act on violent impulse.
One thing is for certain. At the end of this tragic tale, it will be impossible not to form an opinion one way or the other. Oscar Pistorius was born on November 22, 1986, in Johannesburg, South Africa, without a fibula in either of his legs. Oscar's mother, Sheila, knew her son would need surgery to have the lower portion of both his legs removed. So, when the baby was 6 months old, she wrote her son a letter, encouraging him in the trials he was sure to face in his life.
The piece that stuck with Oscar when he read the letter as an adult stated, "The real loser is never the person who crosses the finish line last. The real loser is the person who sits on the side. The person who does not even try to compete."
Sheila strove to ingrain this attitude within her young son even after the 11-month-old Pistorius had both of his legs amputated. 6 months later, he was given his first prosthetics, and from that moment forward, Sheila Pistorius made sure that, above all else, her son would not feel different. And for the most part, he did not. He pursued the world with an energetic thirst for adrenaline, climbing and falling from trees, launching himself onto motorbikes, racing his brother's go-kart so fast down a hill that the pair had to use one of Oscar's prosthetics as a brake.
It was moments like these when Oscar considered his differences the most as a child. He did not feel pain as his manufactured leg ground ferociously against the gravelly road. Yet something else became apparent about Oscar's attitude. He carried with him a sort of reckless abandon, an attitude of jump first, ask questions later. This type of daredevil persona is accepted in the sports world. In fact, it's encouraged. But for Oscar, it would string together a series of unchecked behaviors that culminated in a tragic death. However, in childhood, there was little to suggest his audacious physicality was anything out of the ordinary. He took naturally to athletics, and this seemed like a good environment to exert his energy.
But Pistorius's childhood was not entirely defined by adrenaline and athletically fueled outings. When he was 6 years old, in 1993, his parents divorced. Sheila began excessively drinking as a way to subside the turmoil of single-handedly raising three children. When she moved her family to a smaller home in a poorer neighborhood, she also developed an acute fear of break-ins, going so far as to sleep with a 9mm pistol underneath her pillow.
This planted an immense anxiety within Oscar that stuck with him into his adult years, but it was not necessarily unjustified. In the 1990s, South Africa was on the tail end of the decades-long horrors of apartheid. The institution of racial segregation that had dominated South African society for nearly 50 years. Despite the political moves toward a more democratic country, violence and civil unrest still rampaged through the nation. It seemed at turns filled with random acts of violence and rife with the brutality of organized crime. Townships lobbied for anarchy. AK-47 sold on the black market for $15. Citizens were left as refugees when the fires and violence of territory wars pushed them from their homes. The Pistorius family, even after the divorce, was relatively affluent compared to the incredibly impoverished and segregated black community of South Africa, but the unrest of the country bled into all homes, rich and poor alike, as the tides of reform forced the nation to scramble for any sort of identity.
Above all else, Sheila Pistorius was concerned for the safety and well-being of her children, which is why she enrolled Oscar in the prestigious Pretoria Boys High. When she brought Oscar in to see Bill Schroeder, the school's headmaster, he eyed the boy's prosthetics suspiciously.
Schroeder politely addressed Sheila. She understood that this was an institution of the highest athletic standard, did she not? All enrolled were expected to excel.
Sheila hardly blinked and ignored the man's concerned gaze. Oh yes, she assured him, Oscar was quite accomplished in many different sports.
This unfaltering determination and belief that Oscar was just another boy instilled in him an unwavering confidence that his missing legs would not get in the way of anything he did. Oscar's mother made sure that he never thought twice about fitting in and pursuing whatever it was he was passionate about.
Which is why it hit especially hard when, in March of 2002, Oscar's father came to Pretoria Boys High to break the news to a 15-year-old Oscar that his mother was fatally ill.
Her excessive drinking had led to an incurable liver problem. And during her treatment, she suffered from an adverse drug interaction, one that tragically took her life that March at the age of 43.
The news shattered Oscar, but he was fortunately able to channel his energy into sports. He especially took to rugby and water polo with an incredible fervor. Aided by lighter, more aerodynamic prosthetics, Oscar was able to compete within the ultra-competitive landscape of the Pretoria Boys School. That is, until June 21st, 2003. Oscar was playing rugby on the outside wing when a pass came in, high and fast. Oscar leapt to catch the ball, but as he did so, two boys slammed into him, one high and one low. He spiraled into the air and crashed to the ground, sending a shockwave of pain through his leg.
The drunken fathers on the sidelines drank their beers and goaded. Get up, you sissy. I didn't come out here to watch my kid play against a pansy.
Oscar, as he always did, gritted his teeth, and stood up. He finished the match and pedaled 6 kilometers back to his house. The next morning when he woke up, his knee was discolored and incredibly swollen. Oscar knew immediately that his athletic career was in serious jeopardy.
There are 2 things of note about this injury. First, it is another example of Oscar's reckless willingness to throw himself headfirst into a situation even knowing his relative vulnerability. Second, the injury put him on a crash course with a sport that would see him making history. As fate would have it, the physical therapist that Oscar consulted with for his injury suggested a very specific routine to regain functionality in his knee: sprinting. So, in 2003, Oscar began training with a track and field coach. Needless to say, he took to the sport immediately.
A teacher signed him up for a race,
which he won easily.
Then he anchored the last 100 meters for his school's 4x100 relay
and posted an almost mind-boggling time of 11.72 seconds to take home the victory.
Reveling in the immediacy of his son's success, Henk Pistorius started researching the Paralympics.
All the while, Oscar continued to win race after race, posting ludicrous times for a 17-year-old double amputee.
Then, May 2004 came around, and so too did some relatively shocking news. Oscar Pistorius was chosen to represent South Africa in Athens for the Paralympic Games.
But his tenure in the 200-meter race seemed destined to get off to a rocky start. Oscar had performed well enough that he was set to compete in the men's single-leg amputee division. He was the only double amputee in the entire field. Oscar also had considerable difficulty starting races, mostly because he lacked feet to feel the starting blocks and never quite perfected the proper push-off. This issue came to light as he crouched down for the first round of the men's 200 meter.
Oscar was in the 7th lane, a lane he would come to hate because he preferred to play catch-up. In the 7th lane, almost the entire field lined up behind you. Oscar and his coach had been working tirelessly on his starts, focusing on making sure his weight hovered forward and over his body to launch himself out of the gates.
This is what Oscar was thinking as he crouched on the track. Weight forward. Launch out of the blocks. Long strides. Gain 40 centimeters on the lean.
Oscar was so focused on his technique that he completely missed the sound of the starting gun. For 1.8 seconds, he stayed crouched while the other runners took off. When Oscar finally came to, he scrambled upright and ran after the group. By the end of the first turn, he had moved into 3rd place. In the home stretch, he overtook 2nd and then 1st, as though they were standing still.
He crossed the finish line at 23.43 seconds, finishing 1st in his heat and setting a new world record for the Paralympics.
Then came the finals. 17-year-old Oscar Pistorius, with a mouthful of braces, only 8 months removed from his first therapeutic sprints, lined up in lane 5. This time, Pistorius did not get off to a slow start. From the outset, it was easy to see that the race was never in doubt.
Many might believe sprinting to be an aggressive and uncoordinated sport, a sort of brutish and unrestrained launch to run as fast as you can. The reality is that sprinting takes a great deal of grace. A unique balance of stability and rigid strides with bodily relaxation and fluid limbs. Sprinting has a unique aesthetic from athlete to athlete. The long, tall runner will allow the leverage of their limbs to carry the momentum of their strides, while a shorter, stockier person might look for quick, thunderous steps. In this way, sprinting displays the functions of the body in an incredibly intimate and beautiful way. To watch Oscar Pistorius, even in those early days, It was easy to see that he had a connection to his form that radiated a type of elegance, a powerful but effortless overturning of limbs, at once more electric and more calm than every other runner in the field.
Pistorius thundered past the competition, bursting across the finish line at 21.97 seconds, shattering the world record and securing the gold. There was something radiant in the young athlete that day. He hugged his competition and looked up at the crowd, mouth opened in a joyful smile.
Those select few who watched the 2004 Athens Paralympic Games knew they had just witnessed the birth of a legend, a once-in-a-lifetime competitor. He's a pretty remarkable athlete. And to find out what happens next, follow Sports Criminals for free on Spotify and anywhere else you listen to podcasts.